Hi, this is Kim Jackson, and I've been writing about my passion for advocacy for underserved people, for those with disabilities, for those who have lack of access. And over COVID, I had this process of really self-evaluating where I spend my time and talent, and was encouraged to share my story about advocacy. I did not want to do this alone, so I decided to chime in with a ton of friends in the community. And my first guest for our first official podcast is a colleague, friend, mentor, someone I consider a personal uncle, Rick Davis, who is going to kick off this conversation by telling our listeners, whoever they might be, who you are and why you equally share this platform of advocacy. And then I want to talk a little bit about your positions on early childhood, your feelings about how we've shaped our educational lens in the county, and just your overall thoughts about where we're headed. So, hi, Rick. Nice to have you.
Absolutely. I'm Rick Davis. I head an organization by the name acronym COQEBS, COQEBS, which stands for a Concerned Organization for Quality Education of Black Children. We've been around for a little over 20 years, and we advocate against the achievement gap to try to make sure that over time we correct that in Pinellas County. And the good news is we are headed towards a correction in Pinellas County. In
That's good
fact,
news.
yeah, it is good news because I don't know how many people that are listening to this may remember back in around 2015, we had some real negative publicity around the public school. In fact, I think the term failure factory was used. Well, guess what? Pinellas County is leading the state of Florida in graduation rate for Black and Brown students.
That's
And that is,
outstanding because those
it is.
failing factory articles actually won a Pulitzer Prize for those of our listeners
Yes.
who have not heard of it. The Tampa Bay
I
Times did a
remember.
deep dive on why students in a particular zip code, I believe 33772, for the most part had challenges. And your advocacy, though, stems back at least three decades.
Yeah, we what we did was we put a structure and process in place called the Bridging the Gap Plan, which we monitor on a quarter on an annual basis. So that old saying about what gets measured gets done. So we have been very intense behind the scene working with the district and other community organizations, looking at academic achievement of Black students, everything from graduation rates to increases in gifted and advanced courses, and that are all trending in the right direction, I'm glad to say. And we hope we continue it. I think at this point, the challenge is how do you sustain it year over year over year? But fortunately, we anticipated that. So the plan was designed to be a 10-year plan anyway, and we're well on our way. And
So then what makes you,
Pinellas.
what accounts for the change right now? What do you think was the catalyst that changed from such a sharp slope downward to progress?
I think that once we began to focus on the Bridging the Gap plan with the district, they became very intense about, what is happening with Black students in the classroom. We measure about six different areas, everything from graduation rates to suspension rate, discipline rates, even the amount of Black teachers in the classroom. And while some of those metrics have been going up at a faster rate than others, in fact, the graduation rate is just outstanding. Others are inching up there one or two percentage of degrees at a time, but that is still movement in the right direction. As long as the trend continue to go where it is, I am pleased. And we just keep our foot in the gas and hope that over time we will eliminate this so-called disparity and achievement disparity between Black and non-Black students in Pinellas County.
Well, tell me about the impact of COVID. I know for myself, having a virtual learner, it's been quite, excuse me. I know myself being having a virtual learner has been quite challenging to deal with the social regression and to deal with the isolation and to deal with the constant upkeep of the virtual platform for students. And then just the different modalities. I know I feel very privileged to have the space and time to assist her. But I think about, so many challenges many of us face in terms of dealing with learning loss. Can you speak to that at all?
Yes, absolutely. The pandemic has obviously impacted not just Pinellas County, but all school system around the country, and there is going to be loss. The only question here is how much. The latest data that we're looking at hasn't quite incorporated all of 2020. And in fact, the latest data is just the first two quarters in that school year. But we expect to see some learning loss. For example, I think when they, in the early stages of the pandemic, there were only about 30% of Black students that were actually in classrooms. Well, that is around 60 or 7% now. So I think, again, we're getting everyone back. And we hope that by the time school starts this fall, we will have 100% of our children, especially children coming from historically underserved community, where they may not have the technology, they may not have the connectivity to even do online very effectively. So we're looking at that. And I think the latest area that I think we're trying to focus on now is not so much K-12. I think that part of it is on its way. We're really trying to focus now on pre-K, because there is an understanding, a renewed understanding, that much of the loss developmentally and otherwise happened really in the first 3 years of the child's lives. So we have to start early by trying to mitigate all of those challenges so that we don't end up with this thing we call the achievement gap at the back end of the process.
But how do we help young mothers or whoever is the primary caregiver during that time period? You know, I always talk from the lens of when you talk about equity, if I am worried about my lights or my food or my car or how I'm going to get to work, or also being smashed and taken care of parents or grandparents, then you don't always have time to come and read a book at the end of the night to your children and stay up and make sure that they have what they need to make those gains. What are your thoughts on that, on how we reach them?
No, very true. We have to meet parents where they are. It's as simple as that. Whatever their circumstances is, and we also have to be very aware that we simply can't try to just deal with the child. We have to deal comprehensively with all of the issues that challenge that child, that challenge that parent, that challenge that family. Because there is, as you pointed out, there's a number of variables going on in those folks' lives that impact their ability to help that child develop appropriately and learn and be ready for the K-12 system. So I am happy that we are now understanding that better than we did maybe 20 years ago, and that the renewed emphasis needs to be early on in the child's development and not wait to try to mitigate it in the middle school. At that point, it's a little bit too late. So we're going to see a lot of more concentrated efforts. I've been having vibrant discussions with the district about this. They are also turning towards earlier childhood education. And I'm also engaging with the folks who work in that area, because not all are public school employees. These are individual providers who are taking care and helping our children develop in a lot of the underserved community. And in fact, I had a meeting, a Zoom meeting with them earlier called PEEU. Forgot what the acronym, what is professional early educator or something. They're recently organized, but they have become a very strong voice in the whole space of early childhood education. And I'm pleased for that too, because the more voices, the better. We all have to advocate on behalf of those children.
I like your adjective vibrant, because that's exactly what we need. We need renewed energy for on all sides, you're right, for the educators, for the parents, and for the kids. But I have one final question about how do we entice, as you just noted, well, I'm going to use vibrant educators to enter into the profession. A lot has been asked of our educators over the past year, from a health perspective, from a wellness perspective, from an educator perspective. And sometimes we don't always take into account that educators, while they're teaching others, they also have home lives that we have to respect too. How would you suggest to future leaders of who should get into this field and what we can do as a community to better attract educators?
Well, I think, let me take the first question, which is the attraction or retention of educators, particularly in early childhood education, have a lot to do with how we pay these folks. We have to do better. We don't pay them enough. I don't, you know, you can say a lot of things about we're asking them to do one of the toughest jobs, and I'm embarrassed to even quote you the numbers that they're paid, but I'm working on that. This is about putting more money in that space to make sure that we are attracting the brightest and folks that are committed, because I know for a fact that if you're going to try to help a two-year-old or a three-year-old or a four-year-old develop, you have to be committed to that work. It's not for the mild-hearted. In fact, some folks are very talented at that. And those are the people that we need in front of our children because we have to help them. And there's a high turnover in that space, too, I would mention. It's very, very high. And one of the ways I think we need to mitigate that is by paying them and increasing the benefits and recognizing their worth at that level.
Well, I can't thank you enough for being my first guest, and I hope that you will come back as I grow this new project of mine. And for my new listeners, thank you so much for supporting me in reviewing my newsletter on autism and the blogs on autism and just supporting me in my advocacy. I truly believe that stronger communities make better societies, and I hope that my children benefit from the work that we collectively do. To learn more about my advocacy and what I cherish in our beautiful community in the Bay Area, please go to KimberlyGJackson.com. Thank you, Uncle Rick, for being my first guest. Exceptional conversation, as I expected.
Thank you so much, and thank you for what you do.